The Shared Desk, Episode 3.
Wow, did you do training for that? You should be on radio.
I should. Oh, no. That was 6 months of my life I'm never getting back. Are you kidding?
Well, let's podcast.
Q101, the best music mix. Bullet Alexander spinning all the tunes that are best here in the greater Harrisonburg area. And now here we are with Love is a Beautiful Thing by Michael Bolton. I remember Michael Bolton when I worked at the Top 40 radio station because I would go to the bathroom during his songs. Because at exactly 1 minute to go before I had to cut that song off and put something else on, he'd go to a key change. Love is a wonderful thing. And I'd be
Thank
like,
you.
Okay, 1 minute.
Hey, we're supposed to be podcasting.
Right. And it is the third episode of The Shared Desk. I am T. Morris.
And I'm Philippa Valentine.
And we are still free-forming it, much to the chagrin of all the people out there who are used to our production-heavy audiobook productions.
This is like free-fall.
This is...
Naked free-fall from an airplane.
Oh, my.
And it's awesome.
And it's weird.
Although we might fall splat to the ground at any moment.
Hopefully not now, because we are on a brand new venture, and I figured that would be a good time to hit people onto to what we're doing right now. We actually started this when? August?
It was about 2 weeks ago now, I think.
We've only been doing this for 2 weeks?
Maybe three, hitting towards 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Just over two weeks, I think.
I want to say we started doing this in August. But
it was a week after WorldCon.
Week after WorldCon. The week after WorldCon when we had that terrific interview with Lori McLean of AgentSavant.com. And I really was very proud of that interview. But one of the things that came out of the Reno experience was the fact that we said, okay.
We discovered we needed a digital strategy.
We had to stop dorking
God,
around.
God, that sounds sexy.
I know, doesn't it? Yes, I have a digital strategy. Yes, I do. I have a digital strategy. It's right here. It was courtesy of Q. But now.
My digital strategies are my pants.
Come and find it, Money Penny. Yeah, our digital strategy. Well, technically, you could say this is not a new venue for us. I mean, we already have a digital strategy with podcasting. I mean, we're doing it now.
That's
of course.
True. A print digital strategy.
An
then.
E-print.
Yeah. E-print. Yeah. I thought it was, you know, after what Laurie said.
Let's just come out and say it. We finally bit the bullet and we entered the e-book arena.
Well, I'd already played around with it in Chasing the Bard and Digital Magic. Once I got my rights back from Dragon Moon Press. I did go ahead and put them through the infamous Smashwords meat grinder.
Yeah.
Which basically is a bit of software that takes your doc file and grinds it into various formats for like Kobo, and it can do the Nook and
the iPad.
And it basically spits it out into different channels. God, that sounds attractive. So I had done
that. There you go. Here's a book.
The only thing was that Smashwords so far, I think they're still working on the Kindle Smashwords Joy Happy Ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazon doesn't. Yeah. Amazon
doesn't play nice with others.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't.
So I did a thing where I created an account and we started using Imagine That Studios as the venue for publishing our e-books.
And so this is actually nothing new for Pip, but for me, I have somehow built this reputation that people think I am dead set against ebooks. Mm-hmm. And I'm dead set against...
Was that because you were standing naked on top of like a cathedral screaming, I hate books that don't have paper!
Well, it's a good thing I wasn't standing on top of the Cathedral of Washington, D.C.
Were you responsible that?
I was responsible. It wasn't the earthquake. I was the one standing naked. I won't go any further than that. Oh, man.
Somehow things got knocked off.
Wow, how did this become erotica a la carte?
I don't know. It just tends to happen around
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's true. No, actually, a lot of people think I'm against ebooks. I'm not. I mean, I think ebooks are a great strategy. However, I don't think they're the magic bullet. Everyone has made them out
to be. I never made any claims that I thought ebooks were the magic bullet.
And I think where this is coming from is for... I don't know if you heard it as loudly in New Zealand when... when you were pre-America and you were in.
I remember then.
Yeah,
pre-America.
Yeah, pre-America. You know, when snow didn't innocent. Fall in Wellington
and earthquakes didn't happen in Virginia.
Yeah, there you go. Shocker. I remember when Moravia was nominated for the Epi for Best Ebook, and I thought, oh wow, that's
charming.
That's nice. That's nice. I mean, really, it was my first nomination, and I thought, oh wow, that's kind of cool. But I also remember trying to read an ebook on my Palm Pre.
Yeah. The early days of ebooks were hell on wheels.
Man.
I'm not sure if you know this about me, and maybe I'm not. I'm just revealing it for the first time right now. But my first book, Weaver's Web, was e-published
That's
by
true.
An Australian.
I forgot about
back
that.
Back in the dim, dark ages of e-publishing, 2002.
The Flintstone era. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You literally had to grind like a wheel to get this and it was not popular.
No.
I could have bought, a couple of cappuccinos on what I made back then from e-publishing.
But you remember that at that time, people were saying, they were pounding this pulpit going, e-books are going to change the way we do.
They did.
You know, and they pounded that pulpit. And now here we are, roughly 9 years later, and they're going, see, we told you. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really, Tex?
Well, I hope they weren't feeding their families on what they were getting from
e-publishing. Some of them were trying to.
Good luck.
But one thing I did notice that I tend to call shenanigans on was that when back in 2002, I remember that my profits, the cut that I got from ebooks was about 50%. I mean, it was a big chunk.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And that was even with the folks at Podcasting for Dummies. It was a huge chunk. But then when the iPad came out and when the Kindle caught on, that percentage disappeared. And
oh, really?
suddenly they were like saying, yeah, it's you get 20% or something. And I was like, oh I do? And
yeah, well, there has been some
backlash. There's been some backlash.
There's been some rumors of shenanigans in publishing to do with ebook reporting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that has still to come to fruition, and the fallout from that has still to hit the ground.
I don't mind saying it, but I'm calling shenanigans on one of my publishers. Mm-hmm. I was shocked.
One of your nonfiction.
When one of my nonfiction books, yes, let's get this straight, my nonfiction. I'll just go ahead and say it. When I saw that all of Twitter was both $12.99 for both the ebook version on the iPad and the print version, I was stunned. I'm like, you got to be out of your minds, right?
Yeah.
And even right now, DC Comics is doing that with their great trumpeted reboot of the entire DC universe. They are charging the same amount of money on a digital sale as they are on a print sale.
I'm of the opinion that there should be a cut down.
Yeah, of course.
It shouldn't be like, oh, we're going to, 50%, say. Let's just pull a number. I don't think it's, from what we were hearing when we were at WorldCon in Melbourne last year, it was like a 20% saving. Because let's face it, in publishing, most of the stuff isn't actually on paper. It's not like they're printed on vellum.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't monks like carving out your.
The hardest part about ebooks is making sure that the format's going to look consistent.
Yeah,
and
I mean, you've got editing, you've got covers, you've got formatting.
Same thing. It's the same thing.
And you've got all the middlemen in between.
Right. But the biggest thing about ebooks is when you've got the ebook made for that particular reader, it's done, and you just copy it over. It's one copy, one master copy with a backup in case something happens to the master.
Yeah, but the other lovely, the one of the good things about e-publishing and compared to print is that if you find a mistake, you fix it, you upload it, you copy,
boom,
and there
done.
You go.
Oh, absolutely, and I totally get behind that. I totally get behind it. I have just been trying to figure out how do I make ebooks work practically. Granted, back in 2002 when I was first introduced to ebooks, and I remember trying to read two ebooks, and let me tell you something, trying to read one of the gore novels,
oh my god,
I thought it was painful enough to begin with, but when you try to read it
sadist masochist back then?
I remember reading it in print and thinking, wow, this is a pretty cool book. Then I grew up,
I didn't realize you were in hospital for concussion.
I did. Look, I just remember. Look, I picked. I'll be the first one to say I picked it up because Boris Vallejo did the cover work.
Well, okay.
There you go. Bada bing.
And you
bada
were a teenage
boom.
Boy.
And
yeah.
I was a teenage boy. But then I went back and I read it. And I, in my 30s, and I was like, really? Really? Whoa.
But see, you do this thing, Mr. Morris, and I'm going to call you on it, where you say, well, 5 years ago, I read an ebook and it was terrible and I couldn't get my head around it. So I'm not going to do it again. You know, I mean, technology has caught up considerably since then.
And I will call myself on the mat for that. Sure. Yes, you're right. Because I'm chomping at the bit to get a Nook.
Yeah.
I really want to get a Nook. And I don't want to get the color Nook because that kind of defeats the purpose of getting the Nook.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the iPad.
Yeah. And the experience.
iPads.
The iPads. And the experience of reading on an iPad has been absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I really like it. I mean, I've read Geist on there. We did readings from Ministry on there. I'm currently reading Spectre.
Yeah, the only downside of the iPad is if you want to sit out in the sun.
And that's why I want to get the Nook. I want to get the simple Nook reader. But That's from a consumer point of view.
I just wanted to run over the consumer point of view as well,
right?
Because we are Apple heavy in this household.
Very.
And
God love.
There's nothing
Uncle
wrong
Steve.
With that. I love the iPad. I love what you can do with it and all of that sort of stuff. But it does have its downsides, and I have heard from the Card Night ladies, who are a group of people in this area that I hang out with and play cards in big air quotes, which involves drinking wine and
very little
talking,
card play.
Talking shenanigans about people in the neighborhood. Anyway, but we do actually talk about technology.
I'm back from card night. you're pretty.
But we did talk technology the other day, and one of the ladies was
technology and wine and women. Oh my God, that's a geek dream come true.
Yeah, and pillow fights.
In slow motion.
Yeah, like we do.
Yes, you do.
Anyway, I'm trying to get my point across, Morris. They were complaining about the iBook store and saying that they didn't have the number of books that they could find on the Kindle.
Right.
And so the ladies were all very excited and pointing out that you can get the Kindle app for the iPad.
That's the workaround.
And you can also get the Nook app, I think, for the iPad as well. Mm-hmm. So you can access all those different libraries on the same thing.
And the other thing, consumer-wise, that I think is great for Barnes & Noble. I mean, a lot of people have been saying since the downfall of Borders that Barnes & Noble is next, but you got to give props to Barnes & Noble because they are embracing technology with the Nook. And on top of that, when you buy a Nook and you get into the Nook store, you can go to their coffee shop, hang out,
and read
as many books as you want. I mean,
that's pretty cool.
What a brilliant idea, you know. And eventually people are going to say, "Yeah, I need to go home." Now, if it's like the cheap guy from the guild, if he actually springs for a Nook, he'll stay in that store until he's done, and he'll even bring his own coffee. But I totally agree that the readers themselves, the Nooks, the Kindles, the iPads,
they've caught up.
They've actually caught up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do I think it's the death knell of the book itself?
I don't think so.
I won't go that far.
People do, and there are people that definitely still just like paper.
Yeah.
Some of the e-book comments that we got, one of them was, "Are these coming out in print?" And I'm like,
"We
seriously?
We can't win.
We're trying to put them out." Another thing that I remember from back in 2002 was the variety of formats was a real killer. As far as, you know, somebody had to buy the Palm or whatever tiny device they had to have a different format. And I think with the rise of the EPUB format, which is coming out, you know, which can be imported.
Along with Kindle offering their software for free, mm-hmm. and the Nook, Barnes & Noble for the Nook doing the mm-hmm. same thing. And then you got Smashwords that says, "Hey, look, we'll do the conversion for you." I mean, they have made it a lot more accessible. So I would say that, yes, absolutely, the readership and the way you consume digital media, that has caught up, mm-hmm. and it's pretty impressive. Now, that's from the consumer point of view, but from the author's point of view, I've been struggling with, okay, but how can I make that work for me and not underprice my work to where people think, oh, it's an e-book. So how good can it be?
Which you hear,
especially when you're an indie pubber, or if you
lot of people say, give everything away for 99 cents. And there are those people who are just like, everything, novel, I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
Everything's 99 cents.
Chuck Weindig had a wonderful, and Chuck, if I'm mispronouncing your last name, I'm sorry, but at least I can get your website right. TerribleMinds.com. He had a terrific article about the the digital strategy, because he gives some of his stuff away for free.
Yeah.
Some of his stuff he gives away for 99 cents. Some stuff he gives away for $2.99. And but I even heard him say this when he was talking about DC Comics. He said, "I can't, with a clear conscience, I cannot pay $4 for a comic book in digital format."
Yeah.
And I agree. I totally agree with that. Now, the strategy I think we have come up with, and what I think is, like, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me, is the short story for 99 cents.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to
go. I mean, yeah, I got somebody that tweeted at me. They were like, I think it was, I can't remember the name of the person now. My old brain is giving up on me. I know. He said, I'm reading the book, reading the short story, and it's great. It's cheaper than a can of Coke.
Yeah.
And he said, I can read it, you know, as many times as I like. I drink a can of Coke and it's gone.
Well, right.
It appears again, but not in any useful format.
Unless you're Bear Grylls and you're out in the desert.
Let's not go to Bear Grylls tea. Come on back.
Okay, so perhaps lead to Bear Grylls.
Let's talk about our strategy then, right, since folks probably don't know what it is. So,
what is our strategy?
Well, I want to talk about what I started off doing with, because I had Digital Magic and Chasing the Bard on as ebooks on Kindle and all the other formats. And I started off pricing Chasing the Bard at 99 cents and Digital Magic at $2.99, because I was like, Chasing the Bard is older. It's what they call a loss leader. Ooh, look at me marketing speak. You know, like the sort of the gateway drug. I lure you in for 99 cents and then you got to pay $2.99. But then I actually noticed that there were just as many people willing to pay $2.99 as there were to pay 99 cents.
Right.
And it doesn't, from what I've seen, I actually, when I readjusted the price of Chasing the Bard to $2.99, which let's face it, is cheaper than a cappuccino.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not a lot. When I adjusted that price, that doesn't seem to have affected the sales whatsoever. So I'm beginning to think that $2.99 is a good price point for a novel. I don't think it's so exorbitant that people are like going to freak out and go, oh, I don't think. But then again, I think it's also putting enough value on what you do to produce a novel, which is, let's face it, a lot of work, let alone the formatting and the producing the cover, all that. So 99 cents somehow screams that it's less. It just leaves an odd taste in your mouth. You're like, 99 cents, how good can a novel be for 99
right,
cents?
Right.
Whereas $2.99 is sort of in that nice sweet spot where, you know, people are like, well, it's cheap, but it's not too cheap. And I think if we mention our delightful friend in San Francisco, Dan, he, you know, Dan Sawyer.
Dan Sawyer at jdsawyer.net.
And he's producing a whole bunch of ebook only stuff, I think. The Latham series, he's doing mm-hmm. like detective noir fiction.
Right.
And he's not pricing his at 99 cents. He says there's a sweet spot. I think the upper limit is like $3.50, maybe $3.99, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's some authors are doing $3.99 for a full novel, mm-hmm. then for a novella, or this was one I picked up from Reno.
Novelette?
The novelette. Novelette.
Don't roll your eyes
the
at
novelette.
Me.
Really?
Don't roll your eyes
it's
at me.
It's a lovely
but
little novelette. It's
been around. That's been around for a long time.
I never heard it. I never heard it.
Oh, I've heard
no.
of it.
No. Well,
come on.
Okay. But the novelette, about maybe $1.99 to $2.99, and then the short stories, the quick, boom, 99 cents.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why we are doing this.
So what are we doing?
We've
done Chasing the Bard and Digital right. Magic. The novel's $2.99.
Right.
We're gonna try that. And this is another nice thing about electronic media. You can fiddle around with the price, you know.
Exactly.
Not forever. So we're experimenting. $2.99 seems to be a good spot for my novels at the moment.
But going back to short stories, which we're focusing on right now, mm-hmm. the short stories have been going for 99 cents. And what's been great about that, and I wanted to go into detail on this, was the reason why we were choosing 99 cents per short story than what
Starla
Hutchison
them.
Was asking. Yeah, why don't we bundle them all up and do an anthology for $2.99?
Yeah, now I tried that with Erotica a la
right.
carte, and it didn't do as well.
Right.
I was actually, right. You know, anthologies are an odd bird. Some people really like them. Some people are turned off by them because
They're buying for one, maybe two authors.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the authors, they just
like
kind of skim over.
I explained to you before, it's to me like the it's the bag of mixed chocolates or mixed candies or mixed lollies, whatever you want to call them. Let's go with candies, right?
Right.
So you go into a shop and you pay $2.50 and you get a small bag of candies. Maybe you get 20 candies in there. Now you've really, there's probably some you really like, some you sort of like, and some you absolutely detest.
That's the, well, you guys don't have these, I don't think, in New Zealand. It's the Whitman samplers of literature.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you love the ones with the coconut, and you love the ones with the chocolate fudge inside, but then you get to the like to the really odd one, like Crunchy Frog, and you're just like, oh, you know, and the gag reflex kicks
yes.
in. Same thing with anthologies. And what's great about having the 99-cent approach for every short story is it becomes an a la carte.
Mm-hmm.
You go on ahead and you pick the stories you want to,
mm-hmm.
you want to download. You want to, you know, you may want all of them. You may want some of them. But I think offering
it's
them
giving
99
them choice.
Cents, yeah,
it's basically
and also
the,
it's a great impulse buy. You know, you're scanning around. You go, oh hey, this and it's 99 cents. Boom! I think that was part of the success of iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that instead of buying an entire album, you could buy things a la carte.
Yeah, well, so, with an album, it's often there are songs on there you're like,
that are just
absolute why did
turds.
I pay money for this?
Exactly. I mean, so what do? You go on ahead and do this. Try the same thing with literature. And so far, the results have been pretty impressive.
They've been interesting because...
we know this much. We're going to be inviting Nathan Lowell again to write for us.
We like Nathan Lowell. But the interesting thing, at the same time as we were releasing Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences short stories, I put together a bunch of erotica a la carte short stories. Now, they haven't been doing as well,
isn't
which
that funny?
Is interesting.
Yeah, it seems like the steampunk... I was expecting it to be the other way around.
No.
I thought that the erotica was going to sell better than the steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually been the other way around.
It could be something to do with the different audiences. Mm-hmm.
And going back to what to another strategy is that we're taking the stories, the short stories that we podcast, we're releasing them now as ebooks. We own the stories, we own the rights to them. So
we
paid money for them. So we're going to go on ahead and we're going to circulate them as ebooks. Why? Bottom line, not everybody listens to podcasts.
Yes.
It's a shocker. I know that, especially to the audiences that are listening to us now, but it's the truth. Some people just dig the printed word, or in this case, the e-paper word.
Yeah.
And that's when we came up with the idea of the 99 Penny Dreadfuls.
Well, Penny Dreadfuls were from Victoria.
Little history lesson, everybody.
Sit up straight. You in the
pencils
back.
Pencils down. And before Pip goes into the background, I just want to say, The article you want to look up on terribleminds.com is Making Sense of 99 Cents, the Do's and the Don'ts. This is a terrific article. I highly recommend
it. Should we place a link to it on the...
Yes, it'll be in the show notes. And that's, again, Chuck Wendig or Weindig. Chuck, you'll tell me. .com. Oh, no, sorry. That's terribleminds.com. Okay.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so the Penny Dreadful was something for the popular, you know, the populist people, you know, Joe Bloggs on the street. Often printed in serialized form, cheap as chips, as they would say, adventure story, something to thrill you, something to take you out of your dull, mundane, probably pretty dire life in Victorian England. And
I guess the modern equivalent would be manga in Japan, because manga is built to be disposable in Japan. You know, you get it, you read it, and then
it was very, very cheap. It was, you know, and so I think in our age, the 99-cent short story is pretty much like the Penny Dreadful. It's something you pick up, you grab, you enjoy.
And I would say this is a great venue for authors, particularly authors who are who got their starts in short stories, or mm-hmm. just to have all these short stories, and they go, you know, they say it's a dying market. Well, I got to give credit. It seems that the e market is now getting hit with a lot of 99-cent short stories, especially at places like Smashwords, and that's smashwords.com.
Yep.
And what you see there though are people putting up their steampunk, putting up their erotica, putting up all these terrific short stories, and they're selling them for 99 cents. It's a great impulse buy, and much like with podcasting in the early days, it's revitalizing the short story market. I'm not sure if it's saving the short story market. I mean, you still got, you know, publications going down.
Yeah, the markets have been collapsing for short stories.
It's been
And also yeah. the markets for novelettes and novellas and stuff is also...
It's also been a real dicey market too.
The but, electronic frontier is a good place for those sort of things to go.
And the other nice thing about the short stories is you can use them if you've got a novel, like with Pip and Myself, you can use the short stories to promote that property, mm-hmm. to keep the name out there. The other part of our plan is that after we get all the tales from the archives that we podcast, in between volumes 1 and 2, which are the podcast versions, Pip and I are going to be releasing maybe once or twice a month short stories mm-hmm. in the universe. And they can, they're just going to be out there, and they will be exclusively in ebook format. Some of them may be podcasts, some of them may not.
Yeah. Well, what the other thing that we talked about with Laurie is that the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences has so many different ways it could go, that a good way to introduce people to new characters and new situations beyond Eliza and Wellington is to try out some short fiction. And we actually have an idea for a young adult series based on the Ministry Seven, who are those little scamps who inhabit the streets of London and yeah. meet up with all sorts of things that children probably in these days hopefully don't meet up with. But we have a new main character. It will be set before Eliza met the Ministry Seven, and so it will involve some of the children that are in the novels, but others probably have grown up and moved on.
But this is an insight into why I think authors are starting to really look mm-hmm. at the possibilities of short stories for 99 cents, and why ebooks just in general, self-published ebooks, they've got legs.
Yeah.
You know, there's a change in the technology, there is a change in the way people are consuming fiction, and there's a new opportunity where authors can actually become self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I think self-sufficiency, as well as authors branching themselves out, if they have the permissions, and I'll be interested to see if future contracts will be coming out where they're saying, you know, yes, you can do this and this, but you can't do EPUBs of short stories based on your universe.
I would keep an eye on those contracts.
Yeah,
for that, because
watch your contracts very carefully for this sort of stuff. Because if the royalty percentages are changing with ebooks, that little condition is going to change too.
But you are noticing more. I mean, it also particularly works for people like us and Gail Carriger and other authors who have a platform in New York.
That's GailCarriger.com.
Yeah. And they have an audience already built in.
Right.
And then they can say, hey, you like my novels. That's cool. Here's something else that is in the same universe, and it's a short story, and you're getting something that you don't get in print.
And when you're just starting off a new series like the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, it's great because people are blogging now about, ooh, hey, if you really liked the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, or if you want to get an idea of what that world is like, here are these short stories, and they're 99 cents a pop.
Yeah.
And I'll admit it for myself, I had a chance to test the waters, pardon the pun, for a work in progress. And I used the 99 Penny Dreadfuls.
Bringing Rafe into the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences
and
world.
And man, the reaction of that, people were squeeing over that. And I'm like, all right, I'm headed in the right direction. So yeah, I mean, I think the future's bright for ebooks. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. But I do. I mean, I'm actually quite excited. And I'll also say it, I think we got some snappy little covers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing what you can do with iStock photography and a little bit of Photoshop.
iStockphoto.com.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of links in the show notes this time.
I will. I think this whole e-strategy thing is good because, you know, authors are not just shouldn't just be one-trick ponies in this world. They need to be hybrid authors. This whole thing about... we're all house slaves, or we're all, independent publishers. Why can't we be all things? Why can't we mix
Jacks or Janes of all trades?
Yeah. And also, many streams make a river.
There you go.
And we want a river of cash as authors.
Seriously?
Seriously. Okay, so who wants to start on this particular?
I think you should. This
rant.
Is a brilliant. I think this is a brilliant rant because I've been wanting to do something like this for the longest time.
Well, I was going to write this as a blog post, but I think we need to talk about.
Let it fly here. Yeah.
I think we need to talk about how writers have suddenly decided to market themselves by calling themselves best-selling authors.
Yeah, yeah. What a great time. You know, I, now I'm gonna throw out this one disclaimer. I remember when Scott Sigler did that, and then he did this complete 180, and he went to his fans and he said, "Should I call myself a best-selling author, even though I haven't been on the New York Times bestseller list, or do I come across as a douchebag?" And all these fans said, "You're coming across as a douchebag, Scott."
Yeah.
And he retracted that, and that's when he came up with popular author and failed pimp.
Popular is fine.
Popular is fine. Popular is fine. But yeah, best-selling
implies that you're on some kind of list.
Yeah, and either the USA Today bestseller list or the hallowed New York Times bestselling list.
Yeah. I think I'm happy with best-selling authors as long as you tell me what you're best-selling, where you're best-selling.
Yeah.
Are you the best-selling author in your family?
Yeah, yeah. Are you the best-selling?
Are you your grandmother's favorite author?
Yeah, there is a gentleman that you and I have met who calls himself a best-selling author, and his racket is twofold. One, he does have a very groundbreaking book in social media. Mm-hmm. And we'll leave it at that. He has a groundbreaking book in social media, and it was self-published, but it was the first. It was a groundbreaking book in the fact that it was first. But was it on the, did it make the New York Times bestseller list? No. Did it make USA Today's bestselling list? No. What it did do, though, it allowed him to sell himself as a quote-unquote best-selling author on Amazon for, now, how long is someone a best-selling author on Amazon?
I mean, theoretically, you and I could call ourselves best-selling authors.
Absolutely, we could. You know, we broke into the...
On that one day,
on that
we were awesome.
Yeah, and then later
on... Double Trouble
on,
we're talking about.
And Double Trouble on 888. And we also have the... But going back to this other guy, his second racket, which is a really scary thing because people apparently are buying into it, he is now saying, "Let me help you make your book a best-selling book."
Oh,
that's what I call shenanigans. But it goes back to this best-selling author thing. I really feel like there are people now who are cheapening the title of best-selling author.
I have to say that a lot of my people who are following me now on Twitter are authors. And a lot of them, I look at their bios and it says best-selling author. And I look at their book. And one of them hadn't even got a book out. And I was like, how are you a best-selling
author? That's a pretty neat trick, isn't it? Yeah, that's a pretty neat trick.
Wow. have you got like a large crystal ball and you can see into the future
because,
that you're going to be in a
center? Because, you know, if I had that crystal ball, I would not be looking at best-selling author figures. I'd be looking at freaking lottery numbers and trying to figure out. But it's even worse is the best-selling author title. It's taking something away from when you make...
Yes.
Like I saw on Twitter, somebody tweeted, "Get writing advice from best-selling author Harlan Coben." And I'm like, oh, I want to see this dink. I pull him up. He's a New York Times best-selling dink. You know, I mean, this guy...
Well, he should have said New York Times best-selling author.
Well, in Twitter, they want to leave room for the retweet and yada, yada. But they were throwing at best-selling because...
NYT.
Yeah, true. But instead, they just threw out best-selling because, and maybe it was that blogger who was saying, well... When you say you're a best-selling author, that's what you're implying.
But
you're not anymore. You're not anymore.
Well, people are saying that because they're wanting to give the illusion that they're all that.
They're using it as a marketing term, but it's hinky marketing. I mean, I have lost count in social media how many best-selling authors I have met who are social media entrepreneurs and social media innovators. And I'm sitting here going, really? Really, Yahoo? Okay, fine, whatever. The entire notion of best-selling means that you are on, as you said,
some kind of list.
An acknowledged list.
Yes.
An acknowledged list. Now, is it fair that the New York Times doesn't give out their magic recipe
and
how you become...
I think it is.
Yeah,
because then, people be gaming the system.
And that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to game the system by saying they're so lazy, they're not going to check to see where I am a bestseller.
Yeah.
And going back to it, you and I could say, I mean, Podcasting for Dummies was number one for many weeks on the Nielsen Book Scan.
Yeah.
So technically, I could call myself a number one best-selling author. Do I? No. Because I am reserving that honor
for when our book or my book is at the top of either USA Today's best-selling list or the New York effing Times best-selling list, yeah. And I'm number one there, then you can say, screw you, MFers. I'm a number one best-selling author.
Yeah, but if you did it now, it would cheapen it.
Yeah. And I don't know who to be more upset with. The people who are feeding these egos and saying, oh, you're a best-selling author. Ooh. Or the authors themselves who basically are now saying, yeah, no one's gonna blink, you know, if I say I'm a best-selling author.
Yeah, but I mean, if everybody sits around saying, I'm the best-selling author, I'm just, you can't, it's pointless saying
it's like
now.
SEO. It's like when you're saying, you know, hey, I got 20 websites here, but if you pay $19.95, I'll make sure you're in the top 10. You know what? You got 20 websites over here who all pay that $19.95 to get into the top 10. Mm-hmm. The math isn't working, okay? Unless it's new math, I'm not seeing that. But it's not just the best-selling title people throw around. Critically acclaimed.
Oh, really? Yeah, critically acclaimed.
My mom liked my book. You know, award-winning. Now, again, that's a real fine line you walk there, because when you say award-winning, people are going to say, what awards? You and I, we say rather proudly, we are award-winning authors. But you got to be able to back it up.
Yeah, yeah. People say, I want to be able to go on your website, see where you're a bestseller, where you're an award-winning, where you're critically acclaimed.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, otherwise, just be an author.
Just be an author. You're just starting off. Don't cheapen the titles. Earn the titles.
Yeah.
Earn the effing titles. That is my next goal. And I'm hoping that it's going to happen with ministry. But yeah, not until we get on that hallowed list.
And then we'll use all caps. Best selling New York Times.
Are you kidding? I'm gonna have that stuff monogrammed on my underwear, and I'm just gonna drop it at the next CIFWA meeting and say, read it and weep.
Cause I wanna be there when that happens.
With a camera.
Writers off the clock.
So what do you wanna do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
No idea.
Can I just say how much I really enjoy that bumper?
I don't know how we get any work done.
That's just it. But no, that's for another time. That's another discussion,
I think.
So we're talking about our new fascination, which is High School of the Dead. It's an anime that we saw advertised on Xfinity On Demand.
Yeah.
And
then we found on Netflix.
Then we found it on instant streaming.
I think
yeah.
It's just come out on Netflix.
Yeah, it just came out. So we started watching it. And, you know, I remember when anime was more about... No. I remember when I was first getting into anime, and several...
Tell us any of your hinky stories.
No. No tentacles involved. No tentacles were involved in the recording of this podcast. Sorry, Helen.
Madden.
But the thing about anime, at least the ones that I was watching at the time... Some of the women that I was dating at the time, and then even for a while, Natalie, basically referred to it as softcore porn, and it was because of the sensational stuff that you see in the opening credits. Now, High School of the Dead had that, and I thought, oh, okay, so we're going to see the TNA in the opening credits for no reason whatsoever.
Oh no.
Boy, howdy, were we wrong on that one.
There's a lot of TNA all
the way. When did we get our first panty shot? Was it in the first minute? I want to say it was the first
Apparently, in this particular high school, all the girls can't find any bras to fit their big boobs.
That's one.
Nor can they keep down their very tissue-thin, short skirts. And they all obviously buy their white panties in bulk together.
Yeah, because they were just showing it left and right.
And at the same time...
Oh, the boys. Let's talk about the boys.
They're dressed like priests. Yeah. They're in these black sort of suits.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
And I don't know how accurate that is. Oh, and let's talk about the gym clothes. The boys are in sweatsuits, and the girls are in uber short shorts.
They're like short shorts.
Might as well be thongs. Yeah. And really tidy whitey shirts. And I'm just sitting there going... is it that cold? Why are they playing outside? You know?
I have to say, yeah, if you can't look past that, you just think it's some sort of Japanese animator's wet dream of
and
what they
the
wanted.
Nurse.
And,
the nurse.
Is she a doctor or a nurse?
She's the school nurse. She's the school nurse, and she's like, what, a... She's a... What cup size is that? Is that
a
triple Z?
Yeah.
I mean, what the heck? And the worst bit...
They play it for comic effect.
They do play it for comic effect. We're going to get deeper into that comic effect a little later. But then when she turns around, her butt wiggles. And then when she turns around, her boobs are still moving.
She's pretty much made of jelly in the boob and
butt
department.
Pretty much. And that is the one biggest distraction of what I think is a really good idea.
Yeah.
If
it took out the gratuitous panty shots and the jiggling boobies.
Yeah. I mean, you've got it enough that the girls are well endowed, and you know you expect that in anime now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're going so far with it that it does cross into a line of gratuitousness. I mean, it's like,
is it coming towards hentai?
You know. In the last episode we saw, it was dancing on the edge of it. Dancing on the precipice.
What is actually the definition of hentai for those of us who...
All right. Hentai is basically porn. It's erotica
anime.
in anime format, you know? Yeah. And so, like, if you get Ghost in the Shell, if you get... There was some of that in Ninja Scroll.
Yeah.
In the R-rated version of Ninja Scroll, you had some nudity, you had some scenes of rape, of sexual nature, that sort of thing. It was pretty raw. It was pretty raw. But you never got the money shot. Yeah. In hentai, you get the money shot. And then, of course, you have the infamous La Blue Girl, which is the introduction of tentacle sex.
Well,
and, you know, or I should say the mainstream of tentacle sex. But
by the way, we're going to use the word sex a lot. So
yes.
If you've got any children,
yeah.
Don't let them play on this one.
Yeah. Skip to the time code that we have in the show.
But I have to say that so far we're up to like episode 5 or 6. Hasn't actually been any actual sex.
No. But
there's been groping.
Nipples. There has been
many panty shots.
Many panty shots. Much clivaggio.
Much jiggling.
And then, but then there was the gratuitous over the top bathroom scene. Now the rational part of my brain was going, you know, okay, maybe if this is like a TNA version of post traumatic stress disorder because they've just gone through this massive zombie apocalypse. So now the big girls, the girls with the big boobs,
apparently Japanese animators think that when women are in some sort of traumatic stress situation,
they need to bathe together.
They all go to the bathroom and bathe each other and touch each other and
in
giggle.
Slow motion. Yeah,
yeah. We should say that this is actually set in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Now that we've gotten all the unpleasantries out of the way, let's talk a little bit about the series itself. It's actually, if you can get past the gratuitous, gratuitous panty shots,
which I do just by with rolling my eyes. Like,
yeah.
Oh, here again.
I asked to watch them over again, but that's beside the point. But we never do. but at least when you're awake, honey.
Always awake.
Yeah, I know. But the series is actually pretty good. It is very much like The Walking Dead.
Yes.
It is very much like The Walking Dead, only this time it's done with high school students. And what happens if high school students are the ones that are surviving said zombie apocalypse?
It actually seemed like quite a big high school, and most of them died.
Yeah. And
what do you got, like, maybe a dozen characters got out of there alive?
Yeah. But what I really liked about the opening, and you see a lot in those first two episodes, I remember one image was pretty powerful. These two best friends are running hand in hand,
and they're going, "I'm never gonna let
you win. I'm never gonna let you go.
You're my BFF."
Yeah, BFF and all that stuff. And then one of them gets grabbed, and the other girl starts freaking out and goes, "Let go of my foot!" And she basically stomps the girl's head, forces her to let go, but then she herself gets devoured by zombies.
Yeah. The people that really survive are the ones with some sort of martial arts school. There's a girl that's a spear fighter.
She's a spear fighter. There's another girl who's the captain of the school kendo
team.
She's
the only one with a long skirt for some
unknown reason. Because she's in kendo. Just go with
that. That makes no sense. Then you've got the protagonist male who's got the baseball bat.
He's the emo.
Then
he's,
you've
he's
got the nerd guy
who winds up being the gun expert.
Yes,
and that's a great little twist. And then of course you got the jiggly nurse.
Then you've got the brains of the operation.
Right.
The girl with the pink hair. She has killed some zombies, but she's not big on the hand to hand.
Right. And what I've been impressed about with High School of the Dead is the way they've handled some of the issues that probably would crop up. Like they had this teacher that rescued all of these students, and he's
he was kind of working his way towards setting up some sort. This is like 5 hours after the zombies.
5 hours, and he's actually subtly hitting on some of the students, and it really ramped up the creep factor. And
although to be honest, it'd be hard to be a male teacher in this school because.
It would be impossible to be a male teacher unless you're a eunuch. I mean,
or really deeply gay.
Yes. Not that there's anything wrong
with
that.
No, there isn't. But you could resist the panty shot.
Yeah, you could. So High School of the Dead, this is what I would probably say about it. I would recommend it, but go in understanding that there's a lot of over-the-top
TNA. I wouldn't recommend it for...
No. I would not even recommend it for high school kids.
This was strange because when Xfinity were promoting it, they showed little clips, but they didn't show any of the...
It was very pedestrian what they showed.
If you watch...
They showed zombie clips, though.
They
showed zombie clips.
But if you had bought it for your teenage, son... Because you would have, based on that, you were like,
"Oh,
it's zombies."
My son likes anime.
He likes anime. It's zombies. Then,
of course, the son would have probably gone to his school and go, "My dad is awesome." You know?
Yeah, you would probably be a little horrified, especially with the episode 5.
I want to say it was 7.
Five or seven.
But whichever one it was either Act 6 or Act 7. Once you get past, see, that's where we're at right now. So we know we've got more to come, and
it was weird because they've got all this relentless action, killing people, getting escaping, and then this. I mean, the episodes are 21 minutes long, 25 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, it was right after the bathtub scene where the girls are pouring cold water over each other and touching one another.
Suddenly his teacher is throwing herself on him. In an entirely inappropriate manner.
But it was the nurse. It was the nurse.
She's supposedly the adult.
But what's even more bizarre about High School of the Dead is right after we get that girl on girl action in the bathroom, they cut to the zombie apocalypse. And you see this woman carrying her child going, my baby's still alive.
And the zombie child bites her. She turns into a zombie.
I'm like, okay.
And then we cut back to the bathrooms. I'm like,
what?
I mean, to say that episode was schizophrenic is an understatement.
No lie. But it's good if you can get past that.
I think if you have a tolerance for TNA and you know, I mean, anime is pretty sexualized anyway, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So but personally, it doesn't really offend me. I just kind of roll my eyes, but I'm enjoying it, and I think we're gonna watch the rest of the season and see where it goes, and
and then get ready for The Walking Dead.
Nice starter for The Walking Dead.
This show just gets easier and easier, don't you think? I find it hard to believe that we've actually are straying towards the hour.
The joy of not having to do much production.
That's true, and we're still dancing near the hour mark. But anyway, so let's go on ahead and let's wrap up with a few things we want to let everybody know about. First off, the 99 Penny Dreadfuls.
Yes, you can find them at the moment on Kindle and Nook. Check out Smashwords and your various other. Online retailers, but they're definitely on Kindle and Nook right now. It's just up to Smashwords when the meat grinder spits them out into different channels.
We also have quick links if you go to ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. Just got that tweet, thanks. And if you go to short stories, we have what's available for both Amazon and Nook. Once they become available for both, that's when we release.
We're going to put all the links of the different places that we find them lurking there.
For our next show, we have a special guest in studio, all the way from the windy city of Chicago. We got PC Herring of PCHerring.net.
And Cybrosis fame.
And Cybrosis, yes. He's coming in, and we're going to talk about writing in other people's sandboxes, because PC has written for both of us and he's written for you, and we can just talk about the collaboration experience and what we all thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, coming up,
FenCon. In Dallas-Fort Worth.
Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. We're going to be meeting up with a lot of terrific people there. You can check our individual websites, which is...
PJBallentine.com.
And TMorris.com. For our schedules. I know for a fact that I got some cramming to do, because not only am I going to be on a Eureka panel, which I'm very excited about. God, I'm going to miss you guys when you go off the air. But I'm also on a Phineas and Ferb panel, and I can't get Sonic Boom to watch Phineas and Ferb with me, but I think it's a very cool show.
Well, you can just watch it by yourself. You're a grown adult.
I guess I will have to. We also have some special announcements.
Yeah.
At FenCon.
I
wish we could tell you now.
I hate teasing. You know how much I hate teasing people, T. Yeah. I just hate it.
Yeah, yeah. Remember the last time?
I hate it with a passion.
Remember the last time we did that at Balticon? And people thought I was going to pop the question to you then? Oh, you guys aren't going to be... Oh, but you got the book coming up.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Great. But we're sitting on a couple of... Big announcements. A couple of places we have never been and never dreamed we would be. We're just waiting on final confirmation and thumbs up and chocks away from
which should happen before the 23rd.
I would think by the time we come around to recording with PC, we should be able to completely announce it by then, where we were going to be.
But if not, then we're just going to have to tell. We'll tease you some more. Spill the beans at FenCon, and then record an episode while we're there.
What you can do to keep an eye on what we're doing is, of course, join our official pages. They're not fan pages. They're fans of our writing pages.
And they're actually not even fan pages. They're group pages.
They're
group pages, because we want the community of fans to participate, to get mm-hmm. to know each other. Well, to do basically what Beth Case did, where she was like, hey, I've got these hardbounds.
Yeah.
And speaking of Beth... who is also friends with us on Twitter, we want to announce that we're having a tweet up Friday night of FenCon.
Tweedledee.
Tweet up that's Friday at 8 p.m. And you can get the details from our group pages, because that's it's being...
Yeah, we'll probably tweet them and Facebook them and all assorted other media.
But to our listeners in Dallas-Fort Worth, if you know of a really good tiki bar...
Yeah, we love tiki bars. We collect the mugs and we drink the drinks.
So if there's a tiki bar in Dallas-Fort... Hey, look, if there's one in Las Vegas, there's got to be one in Dallas-Fort Worth. So if you guys have a good tiki bar that you can recommend, that's probably... We'll head up after the official tweet up.
We'll
which
have
is gonna,
food and then zombies.
Texas barbecue, and maybe if we're lucky, tiki drinks. So finally, if you've got comments or questions, topics you want to hear us cover on the show, don't worry. Crazy Uncle Charlie will be coming back. We're collecting questions for him. So if you want to send Crazy Uncle Charlie a question,
if you want to send us a question,
you can send us email through our respective websites. You can also call us on the voicemail, which is 703-791-1701. You can also tweet us at T-Monster or
Philippa Jane.
And of course, you can always find out what both of us are up to at theministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. We're going to give that a second ding. And you can also say hi to our characters, Eliza and Wellington, at Books and Brawn on Twitter. So, hey, you know, the Shared Desk, it is a non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.5 share-alike license, protected by those lovely people at Creative Commons. By the way, we also need to mention our show graphics are provided by the ever-so-talented...
J.R. Blackwell.
.com. And she's got shelter in place. We're really pulling for her. JR, change the world. That's all we got to say, baby. Change the freaking world.
I know where I'm going when the zombie apocalypse breaks
out. I'm going to JR's and Jared's.
Yeah.
So until next time, I'm T. Morris.
I'm Philippa Valentine.
Are you sure?
You were just staring at me blankly.
Until next time, enjoy the ride.
I'll catch you later.